here to do is really uncover what's happening in the world, take that information, share it with people. We're not conspiracy theorists, we're conspiracy investigators, really. And it's our job, as Lee Dundas said yesterday, we are the army. We are the people that have to spread this and uncover what's happening and then do our part to make a difference in the world and bring heaven to earth.
So the last thing that I made with my butcher box shipment was aloo chicken, and it turned out really well. One of my favorite things is to get the shipment and then open up the New York Times cooking app and see what I want to create over the next few weeks. It helps my creative cooking chops, and both my wife and I really enjoy it. ButcherBox offers a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing price, plus they have exclusive member deals, and they also have their own recipes, although I am preferential to the New York Times app, but that's just me. And you can sign up today at butcherbox.com/conspirituality and get their special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. So for that year, you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/conspirituality and use code conspirituality to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order.
Hey, do you have trouble sleeping? Then maybe you should check out the Sleepy Podcast. It's a show where I read old books in the public domain to help you get to sleep. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of classic stories like A Tale of Two Cities, Pride and Prejudice, Winnie the Pooh. Stories that are great for adults and kids alike. For years now, Sleepy has helped millions of people catch some much-needed Z's, start their next day off fresh, and discover old books that they didn't know they loved. So, whether you have a tough time snoozing or you just like a good bedtime story, fluff up the cool side of your pillow and tune into Sleepy. Unless you're driving, then please don't listen to Sleepy. Find Sleepy on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes each week. Sweet dreams.
Spirituality, where we investigate the intersection of conspiracy theories and spiritual influence to uncover cults, pseudoscience, and authoritarian extremism. I'm Derek Barris.
I'm Matthew Remsky.
I'm Julian Walker.
We are on Threads and Instagram, both of which were down today on the day we're recording, actually. Something's going on. We are at Conspirituality Pod, and you can access all of our episodes ad-free, plus our Monday bonus episodes over on Patreon at patreon.com/conspirituality. You can also access our bonus episodes via Apple subscriptions. As independent media creators, we truly appreciate your support.
Conspirituality 196, Julian goes to the New Age Expo. For the last 22 years, astrologers, channelers, and UFO enthusiasts have set up booths alongside crystal healers, purveyors of esoteric books and pseudoscience products, and people claiming paranormal abilities at the Airport Hilton, right here in LA. In recent times, this event, called the Conscious Life Expo, has increasingly also featured speakers spouting red-pilled conspiracy theories about COVID, vaccines, and the satanic alien reptilian cabal coming for your kids. So a few weeks ago, I donned my gray baseball cap and grabbed my recording equipment to do my own research on the latest iteration of hotel conference room conspirituality.
Part one, Rabbit Hole Roundtable.
Okay, so today we'll be discussing audio clips from both of the big ticket events I went to, starting with the Rabbit Hole Roundtable. Stay tuned for the Medical Freedom Symposium in part two of the episode, which features the Del Bigtree and Lee Dundas clips that for sure were the climax of my anthropological expedition. I somewhat nervously took my seat in the audience at the Rabbit Hole Roundtable, hosted by none other than Sasha Stone. Now, at the top of the show, one of the organizers made some introductory remarks in which she appreciatively referred to the crowd as an army of conspiracy investigators, whose job, as it turns out, is to bring heaven to earth. And they seem to like this.
Well, of course, it's nice to have a mission in a chaotic world.
Absolutely. After that, it was time for the featured speakers. And first on the mic was a guy who apparently had come on board at the last minute. He was in his 60s, you know, one of those partly balding hairstyles with the long silver hair in the back. I don't have his name because he's not on the webpage. But Sasha introduced him as one of the greatest astrologers on the planet, which tracks.
The word conspiracy basically means, well, Greek, con is like with, like a conjunction, something that comes together. And the spire, conspire, is the root word to breathe, inspiration, expiration. And basically the word conspire is not a scary word at all. It just means to breathe together, period. And so when someone accuses you of being a conspiracist, know that you have people that you're breathing with. Thank you.
This argument reminds me of yogis who say shit like, well, you know, the Nazi symbol is really Hindu. And yeah, that's technically true, but symbols change meaning over time, as does language. And this is really just coded wink wink for, we're not the crazy ones. Look how I can justify all the crazy shit I'm about to say. And that gives everyone else in the room cover. That's where the clapping comes in, I think. And Julian, I have to say, I know how hard it is for me to listen to this stuff on podcasts and YouTube. Sometimes I stand up and walk around my house or into my backyard for a minute to clear my head after dealing with this shit. So being in the room while it's happening is a whole other level. And how did that affect you emotionally? I mean, you know, I can't hide my emotions ever. So were you able to push everything down and just sort of fall into the mix of the people there?
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, I'm doing total poker face under my baseball cap. Every now and again, though, there's kind of this mismatch, right? Because the whole room would be in awe or outrage. And because almost everyone was reacting, I'd catch myself also having a reaction, which was typically to grin at how insane the claim was and at how glad I was that I was catching the recording. Like, oh, I'm so glad I have the recorder on right now. I'm killing this, right? But I have to say, it did take a few days to decompress from the stress of swimming in those waters for hours at a time and keeping my mouth shut and having no compatriots nearby.
Yeah, so about his etymology, it's kind of a gimmick. But I think it's kind of sweet in a way. And I want to point out that he's explicitly pinging the social benefits of conspiracism here. So like we have examples of trite and self-serving, you know, iterations of that as, you know, when Ron Watkins, after being unmasked as very likely being, you know, Q of QAnon, he says, maybe this was all about the friends we made along the way. But I do think we have to keep in mind that these are actually folks who are breathing together about their shared suspicions, fears, resentments. He is talking about a faith community. And, you know, maybe this definition might not be that far off from what it actually feels like to be part of a contested subculture that, you know, it's defined by cultural and family alienation. So there is some social glue here that he's laying out to trap people with. It's a roundabout way of saying, hey, I love you guys. I'm really glad that we're hanging out.
Also breathing COVID together.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Doing kirtan together. Yeah, I mean, it felt like the opening, like 10 minutes was definitely about creating that shared sense of we're in this together.
Yeah.
Well, we are these people who have these shared values. So next up is the former mayor of Nevada City named Renette Sainum. She resigned in 2020 after a string of controversial remarks on quarantine measures led to public outcry.
So I think that people realize that no one's going to come and rescue them. I think America's a little behind the eight ball, and I think that's because Europe has had battles and wars on their soil, so it's much more real. They have grandparents and great-grandparents telling the stories. Here, we're removed from it, and we have some serious threats here in America, and I'm very greatly concerned about the invasion that's currently taking place. I think it's the biggest danger America's faced since its inception. But I also believe that people are realizing that the government's not going to save them, the military's not going to save them, corporations aren't, no one's going to save them. It's us. And so I also feel like people, too, for the first time, thank you, COVID, so very much, has actually made people realize that the health has to be in their own hands. They're not looking towards and turning towards allopathic care any longer. They understand that those are actually equivalent to the gas chamber. And so they're taking their health back, and they're using frequencies. They're using alternative things that were alternative a few years ago. They're now coming into the mainstream, which is very exciting.
I'm always amazed by New Agers who use this fucking militarized language. It's so removed from reality, which is why she can just make that extremely unthoughtful comparison of COVID or allopathic care to gas chambers. And no one bats an eye. You don't hear any gasping in the room. I mean, at least when I hear like a Joe Rogan or a Cameron Haynes or their ex-military survivalist friends speak like this, I can think, yeah, I can actually see you joining up with a militia and actually know having some experience if you ever needed that skill set. Did you get a sense that anyone in the room was actually combat ready, Julian?
Definitely not, especially not in this particular audience. It just felt like they were enthusiastically embracing the metaphor and then self-identifying as being, it's a kind of a cosplay thing in the army of conspiracy investigators fighting a war, as we'll hear Lee Dundas really scream about later. But overall, this is a pretty soft and comfy demographic engaging in what felt like fantasy.
You know, there's two notable things that I'm hearing. First of all, Renette opens with kind of a version of this repurposed fascist idea, which is that war is morally and intellectually and spiritually purifying. She's hinting that America hasn't been chastened or cleansed by a recent enough bloodbath, mm-hmm. and that makes us weak. We're disconnected from material risk. We're ignorant to what is really at stake in the day-to-day struggle for existence. If we had cultural memory of mass destruction, we would be willing to die for the motherland. So I remember one Marxist friend of mine making the same argument in the other direction to suggest that the effect of war trauma could be the sign of a greater commitment to the commons or mutual aid. But of course, that's not where she's coming from. But the second thing that I hear rings a little more true to me on the level of description, if not solution. I think the rhetoric of no one is coming to save us is pretty powerful because it's literally true, I think, from the point of view of global North neoliberalism. Like America goes through COVID and there's still no real discussion of Medicare for all at the center of Democrat politics, right, in an election year. Every COP meeting that passes shows that emissions are only increasing. As the evidence for climate collapse builds up, tech companies incentivized to produce accelerated, misinformation while soothing people with consumerism. But even if she's hooked into this larger zeitgeist view, neither she nor anybody in these crowds are naming these same problems in detail. Like everything gets reduced down to the body politic and to the body. Like the southern border is being defiled, just like vaccines are poisoning us. But, as with Tucker Jones or what, Alex Jones and Tucker Carlson, there's nothing ultimately on offer from that libertarian critique. You might get better home security systems and stockpiles of supplements, emergency meal packs, but nothing else really.
Yeah, freedom to be sick and get everyone else sick.
Well, and freedom to be alone, but also feel good and self-righteous about being alone.
I think your new avatar name should be Tucker Jones.
Tucker Jones,
man.
I'll take Alex Carlson. Yeah, I mean, it does feel like all of the militant military metaphors have to do with asking people, how strongly committed are you to these beliefs?
Yeah.
And for the most part, yeah, they're not going to take up arms, but this is how stochastic terrorism also can function, right? Next up was a guy who goes only by G Money. Sasha introduced him as the architect of the crypto coin that is going to essentially free humanity from the matrix. He did all the standard kind of shtick about the shadow government who controls us through a fake currency, how humanity has been turned into weaklings who can't fight back, but that this cryptocurrency was designed to empower the truthers. He also announced to everyone that they were in that room because they were an alpha.
Well, of course, except for you, Julian, except for you.
I was the one beta male in the group.
Right.
The last of our speakers in this kind of introductory round was someone named Jane Evershed. She's a frequent Sasha Stone collaborator. She's also an artist and a poet.
I would like to reintroduce the Indigos as the people on Earth that are bringing us forward, that they've been trying to kill for a very long time and destroy our DNA. I would imagine that everybody here in this room is probably an Indigo with 6-strand active. And along with that, I'd like to say that the bringing back the nurturing mother archetype is also crucial to this, because we have this patriarchal imbalance, no offense to men at all, because in the end we get post-humanism if we keep along the track that we're in, and no genders and nothing matters. The human is post-history.
I don't know how old she is, but it sounds like she's of the age that got queasy first about like refrigerator moms in the late 50s, but then they started to fret about women going to work in the double income age.
Yeah, you're right. I'm actually realizing she's around my mother's age and she spent a lot of time in South Africa. So she has some of that accent. She's kind of like my mother's doppelganger in a way.
Yeah. I mean, and it's really kind of a standard reactionary pseudo-feminism that just ignores, you know, misogyny, capitalist pressures on women, while blaming them for responding in ways that attempt to gain agency, going to work, fighting for reproductive rights. You just can't pine for the return of the nurturing mother without blaming women as people and parents in this reactionary way.
It's also interesting that she says no genders, considering what her buddy Sasha is going to say very soon.
Well, and also, like, these people keep fucking that up. Like, she means that post-humanism will erase biosex differences, but they don't even know their arguments well enough, because like no genders might actually be closer to gender ideology aspiration, insofar as that point is no essentialized or non-fluid gender expressions.
It's a weird appropriation. There was one more roundtable member, a yoga teacher from LA named Bianca Rulig, who wrote a book called Activate Your Pineal Gland. But her only contributions to the conversation were about things like tin foil transitioning to aluminum foil at some point in history as part of the chemtrail conspiracy to control our minds.
And she offered citations.
Oh yeah, voluminous citations. No, there's just colorful PowerPoint pictures, you know, to support fanciful claims.
Okay, so did she seem stressed out? Was she serene?
You know, I think for a lot of our listeners, this is a presentational style we're familiar with from the yoga world. There's a kind of stiff serenity and authoritative matter-of-fact confidence that feels to me like it's covering over anxiety and an obvious lack of substance.
Yeah, I looked her up on Instagram. So she's got 9,000 followers, so pretty low engagement on most posts. She has some adventurous conspiratorial material around underground tunnels and petrified giants beneath famous archaeological sites, but nothing too offensive. Like, all of it seems to be on that bottom layer of Abbey Richards' pyramid, you know, nothing that crosses over the anti-Semitism line. Mm. But then also some very earnest texts that might indicate maybe some broader reading, although they come from the quotes world meme generator. Like there's from Chekhov, the role of the artist is to ask questions, not answering them. So that's Chekhov just asking questions. But she also sells something called Sematones for vibrational healing. The homepage for the very DIY site says,
I'm going to pronounce it Sematones. At Sematones, we believe in the incredible potential of sound therapy to heal, restore, balance, and enhance well-being. Sound has been utilized for centuries as a powerful tool for healing and transformation. We are here to guide you on a journey of discovery and rejuvenation.
So I think the first person plural there is a stretch because I think it's just Bianca. But maybe it's plural because, you know, her middle name is Jill and she's using an AI in her clip for her promo video for Sematones. I think it's Sematones, Julian.
Hello, I'm Jill, your virtual guide for sound and vibration wellness. I'm here to introduce you to the world of Sematones, your ultimate digital cymatic therapy tool for your holistic wellness journey. With Sematones, you can experience the power of sound to transform your life.
I think it's amazing to imagine using a really bad AI voice to sell your sound therapy files, but I don't know.
And to mispronounce the name of your amazing treatment.
Wait a minute. Do you actually know about cymatic Sematones?
No.
All right. Okay.
If it's a play on cymbal, which is what it seems like, it would be Julian would be right. But if you ever actually expect AI to nail pronunciation of words, I'm bad at it often, and AI is way worse.
Or pseudoscience to be logically consistent.
It gave me the feeling that maybe everybody's going to go back to like HAL in 2001 for their spiritual voices. Like we want this sense of the AI voices being uncanny and transcendent coming from another dimension.
Open the pod bay doors, HAL.
But the AI makes sense because when I looked into her book, she opens with a bio note that she's been working in IT for 15 years. Before suffering a series of panic attacks, sent her on a spiritual quest on which she recalled some of her Filipino Catholic roots and the associated mysticism.
So the New Age PhD route, in other words.
Pretty much. She says that she was born into a well-to-do family and went to private school in the Philippines. So the impression I get is of someone who's kind of a hobbyist who may not need this to work financially. So, you know, why not research the pineal gland and write a whole book about it in New Age lingo?
If you're a fan of workplace comedies like The Office or satire like The Onion, then I have a podcast that I know you'll love. It's called Mega. Mega is an improvised satire from the staff of a fictional mega church. That's the premise. Each week, the hosts, Holly Laurent and Greg Hess, are joined by guests, people like Cecily Strong or Jen Hatmaker, to portray characters inside the colorful world of Twin Hills Community Church, which they describe as a mega church with a tiny family feel. The result is a sharp-witted and hilarious look into the world of commercialized religion using humor to cope with the frightening amount of power that church and religion have. So I very much recommend you checking out Mega's episodes, like the one with Saturday Night Live Cecily Strong playing Cece String, a hilarious character who's fresh out of jail, and also comedian Jason Mantzoukas. You may find yourself dying of laughter and perhaps inspired to take an improv class yourself. Mega is able to keep you laughing as you think and reflect about the world we live in. You can find Mega on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to the I Can't Sleep podcast with Benjamin Boster. If you're tired of sleepless nights, you'll love the I Can't Sleep podcast. I help quiet your mind by reading random articles from across the web to bore you to sleep with my soothing voice. Each episode provides enough interesting content to hold your attention, and then your mind lets you drift off. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. That's I Can't Sleep with Benjamin Boster.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
We're getting the ideological lay of the land here. We are self-identified conspiracy investigators who breathe together to uncover the apocalyptic truth. We're ruled by a shadow government, pharmaceuticals are like gas chambers, and people in Europe who've had recent wars on their soil can help us to see the illegal immigrant invasion and take a stand. We are all alphas who can fight back against the invisible enemies who produce time at no cost. This is one of the things G-Money said, so as to enslave us by investing in a special cryptocurrency. We're also all indigos with the sixth strand of DNA active who can manifest the nurturing mother archetype, embrace divine masculine and feminine in a unity of consciousness, and sidestep the danger of transhumanism where there will be no more genders.
Okay, so that's ideology. But what about the affect lay of the land? Like, are people stressed out? Are they excited, passive, paranoid? Are some of them taking it all in with like closed eyes and deep breathing?
There wasn't much of that. Of the two events I went to, this was actually the smaller crowd. It was also mostly women in their 50s and above. I would say out of about 40 people, smaller than I thought it would be, there were maybe six guys. I saw a lot of blonde hair extensions and Ugg boots, yoga pants, and wraparound earth tone cardigans.
All right.
The sense I got that this was kind of like the Sasha Stone groupie set.
All right.
But the disconnect here is that a lot of what he says is incomprehensible, or he uses vocabulary that I think a lot of American New Agers don't fully understand. So it felt like people are just kind of sitting there taking it in and trying to keep up with what is really a kind of a startling metaphysical worldview, some of which they've heard before.
Yeah, and his vocabulary, along with the accent, I think is definitely pretentious and urgent. Mm-hmm. I think his cadence is scriptural. He sounds like some sort of Victorian era alchemist.
Yeah, and so to speak of that devil, we've been waiting for him to step up. He is, in fact, my mirror world doppelganger, which our Patreon supporters will understand. He would go on to say that everyone in the room was not just an alpha and an indigo, but also a poet. He said the reptilian cabal people could never dream of writing a poem. And then he used a photo of Federico Garcia Lorca fearlessly facing the firing squad as inspiration and metaphor for the awakened conspiracy investigators in the room who have this poetic sensibility. But of course, 2 minutes on Google reveals to me that Lorca was assassinated, not executed. His remains were never found, and that this photo is actually a still from a Spanish music video.
Yeah, there's so many worlds colliding here in like just a melted diagonalism because, yeah, okay, so Lorca was assassinated by Spanish fascists, and then Franco suppressed his work until the 1950s. But like, why, Sasha, was he assassinated? He was assassinated for being gay and socialist and part of the symbolist and surrealist movements that challenged authoritarian politics. And so when I say diagonalism, what I mean is that like there's no real sensible political line you can draw from being a fan of Lorca, which isn't uncommon for a Gen X artistic type, mm-hmm. and then investing in a kind of elaborate QAnon world. Like Lorca was imagining a world of grace and surprise and melancholia that would rival the paranoias of Spanish fascism. Like he might use metaphors of reptiles and stolen children, but he would be doing so in a conscious way. So it's so strange. Anyway, you did just ping this recent episode that you did, Julian, where you unfolded a kind of Naomi Klein style meditation on how Sasha Stone is your mirror world doppelganger. So what was the 101 there?
Well, I mean, the weird thing about Sasha Stone and my interaction with him is that he is pretty much the only other white Rhodesian born person I've come across in the United States. And I can say that now because I've just been in the same room as him. He's about 4 years older than me. So we both are born in this tiny, tiny minority of white people during the short-lived existence of a country named Rhodesia. We both got into rock bands in our 20s. We both got into New Age spirituality. And then we've had this divergence that has taken us to opposite ends of this conspirituality topic. So I explored that in the bonus episode and talked a lot about the history of that area. And one of the things I wondered out loud about is like, hold on a second, to what extent is this guy's obsessive preoccupation with a terrible invading colonizing force that wants to enslave us and take away our freedom are really just him projecting a bunch of his own guilt and shame about having been part of the British Empire in Africa.
Right.
Now, we've actually covered this guy before, as everyone will remember. Certainly you guys will remember. He co-hosted this Line in the Sand online conference back in 2020. We ended up writing an open letter to him about his calls for violence. He was one of the first people we saw really going all in on this idea that public health officials should be eviscerated in his language. In his opening remarks here, he starts by holding up a huge Vajra Dorje, because of course he does.
The status quo is neither here nor there. It's wherever we situate it with our consciousness. This is a phase conjugate technology. This is a technology of Vajra Dorje used by the ancient god kings to terraform, to manufacture, manifest reality. This contained, by best accounts, red mercury and other very abstruse elements inside the body of it. But they would hold this thing and press it, squeeze it. And as you squeeze this technology, provided you have the correct coherence in your blood soul, you're able to activate the ancient Vajra Dorje and to ill or for good. You will have a blue beam and a red beam coming out of it, just like Luke Skywalker in Star Wars, which is a story that really takes the lead off the ancient gods of the Hindu epics, the Mahabharata.
What the fuck did I just listen to? This dude has been sniffing Zach Bush's supplements pretty hard, you know, the phase angle stuff. And, you know, He's your country mate, Julian. So is Blood Song a South African music genre? Like, is that Ladysmith Black Mazambo?
I think you meant Mambazo, but no, Blood Song is not a thing. I mean, you know, we often talk about conspiracy bingo, right? We're like, how many different random conspiracy theories can you weave together into a word salad? This was like mythopoetic bingo, right? He's like referencing Star Wars. He's referencing Tibetan Buddhism. And I can't help but also notice the phallic symbolism here of the Vajra that you're going to squeeze and hold and rub in specific ways, and then beams of light are going to come out of it.
Yeah. Well, was he waving it around? Was there a bell? Like how Tibetan did he get with things?
He was just holding it up in the air as he sat there, but it was really big. It was maybe like 15 pounds, I would imagine.
Yeah. I've seen that kind of large, almost ceremonial, like it's a display or trophy size that you would find in temples.
Yep.
And they have nothing to do with kings terraforming anything. Yeah, it's a South Asian ritual object that some gods wield to demonstrate unshakable wisdom. And of course, like, oh my God, you actually do have one that's 15 pounds. He's showing it to us on a... No. That's the dagger.
It's the dagger, yes. It's not the... Yeah.
It's the dagger. Okay.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
It's nice and big. That's a nice big one. We have envy.
Yeah, nothing to do with terraforming. Orientalist claptrap? Check. You know, this is a guy who stopped in Kathmandu on a flight back to Bali. He went to the shops around Bodnath. He bought some ritual objects as a spiritual tourist. And now he's waving them around in front of QAnon Karens.
Okay, so now notice how he does this thing of locating a kind of colonialist, an explanation of colonialism within this claptrap cosmic worldview.
We've all got so many strains of cosmic DNA coursing through our veins. And we are capacitors of the divine. We're also capacitors of the demonic and the diabolical. And that we've seen play out for the last 500 years, for sure, the 500-year passage of the Vatican crimes, of the papal decrees that allowed the French and Portuguese and Spanish and English and Dutch, essentially, to go forth and massacre the black skin, brown skin, red skin, yellow skin people of the world. That was harvest of humanity at an epochal level. 500 years of blood sacrifice and harvest of humanity. We are living in the thrall of that witchcraft today. We have not yet redeemed it.
Right.
We are the ones who have to redeem it.
Methinks he doesn't know how DNA works. And again, here we're running into all this militarized language. It's all affect, as you pinged, Matthew. I mean, he is one of the kings of affect of our conspiritualist genre. His reading on colonialism and the notion that we're post-colonial, he says this in the full clip. I did edit some of these clips down, but he talks about that as well. As if the practice hasn't just changed forms. And to be clear, still exists in some parts of the world as we know. All that makes no sense with an accurate reading of history and of the present. So he's talking about redemption of a process that's still occurring now, and a bunch of people near LAX are the ones who are going to change the course of history.
It all happens in the realms of consciousness. We just need to set our intentions. Now, as might be expected, Sasha dominated most of the proceedings here. He briefly asked Jane Evershed to weigh in on something called Operation Indigo Skyfall. And she gave like two sentences on the revelation of finding out that the big chemtrail conspiracy's official name, you know, in the government agencies, was Indigo Skyfall. And this drew a collective gasp from the crowd. The powers that be are trying to eliminate the Indigos, as she told us, and they're humanity's one true hope. Then Sasha used this to go off on a wild tangent about a woman who apparently after walking through an English crop circle started manifesting amber beads from her hands and feet whenever they touched water.
Oh, wow.
He said her upscale Manhattan apartment was supposedly filled with millions of these beads when he visited it as part of a research team, because Sasha's a very important guy. He has it, he said, on the highest authority that this is related to Morgellons syndrome and that we all have it now, just like Joni Mitchell.
Okay, so wait a minute. Was the amber exudation good or bad? I mean, Morgellons syndrome rings a bell. I think Magenta Pixie used to talk about it. Christiane Northrup talks about it. What are they talking about?
Yeah, Joni Mitchell is one of the most famous people associated with Morgellons. It's a condition in which people come to believe that they have little fibers of foreign matter growing out of skin lesions that shouldn't be there, and that might be organisms or evidence of any number of different things. People get kind of obsessed with picking their skin and saving these fibers and trying to get doctors to test them and find out what they are.
So is this, it's not a diagnostic category. It sounds like a psychiatric condition.
Yeah, that is the medical consensus on it, that it comes from a kind of compulsive scratching. It's often highly correlated with drug addiction and with various kinds of cognitive deficits. What the medical establishment has pretty much at this point agreed upon is that there's this compulsive scratching and then you get these wounds and then fibers from your clothing or your blankets or your furniture gets embedded in the wounds. And then you find it and you go, oh my God, there's another one.
And of course you keep scratching.
Yeah. Yeah. So oh, I mean, it's really awful. Through the course of the rest of the presentation, Stone claimed to have personally examined the remains of ET visitors. He said that mountain rangers were actually pyramids that served as charging stations for UFOs. He actually showed a short video that he said was an actual instance of this. He said it once again, he had it on the highest authority that Earth would soon be granted entry into the Galactic Federation. He claimed that the only explanation for elaborate ancient religious architecture has to be alien laser technology, and that contemporary architecture was designed to obfuscate our divine and cosmic consciousness as would otherwise be expressed through sacred geometry. But look, all of this is just far out New Age stuff, right? It's always been part of conventions and expos and symposia like this to some extent, going back to the 80s. I don't think it's neutral or harmless, but it is not as anchored in actions people can be motivated to take in the real world, or decisions they can make about their bodies and ways they can come to perceive government and institutions as the kind of conspiracy theory bingo that happens in this last 2-minute stream of consciousness from him.
We've arrived at a critical situation, critical point, where every human being is a ticking time bomb. And again, it comes down to the fluoride, glyphosates, and heavy metals. So that's now in expressly the aluminum in every human body now. So why did, in 1962, the world's water supply become contaminated through the United Nations compliances? Kurt Waldheim, Nazi war criminal, was ushered in 62 as the Secretary General of the United Nations. And what did he do? Introduce fluoride into the global water supply. Think about it. That was used by the Nazis to quell prisoners and dumb them down, dampen the pineal function. So 1962, infiltration of water. And we've seen systemic infiltration of the air through chemtrailing and the soil through glyphosate, Monsanto, that whole nightmare. I don't need to educate anyone here about that.
But Monsanto is Monsanto.
Yeah. All we've seen, anyone who pays attention to history and to truth can see the systemic and endemic infiltration of air, water, and soil by the powers that be. The powers that be are your friendly government. But this is a serious matter because each one of us now is a time bomb. And when Skynet goes live, if Skynet goes live, the information can and will be beamed into each of us to cause mass depopulation events, which they could do absolutely categorically. Heart attacks, whatever it is, it's coming down the pipe.
Julian, I know South Africans say aluminium. So Rhodesians, it's aluminum. Well, we just want to be straight on the language here.
I think he's just been here long enough that he's changed how he says it. I think we also spell it differently.
Oh, okay. And zebra. He didn't talk about the zebras.
He didn't talk about the zebras. That's true. You know, I have to say in both of these last two clips, and I said this was the last clip, but it's not. Sorry, people. In both of these last two clips, there's almost a wokeness, right? It's mirror world wokeness where he's talking about, well, the horrors of colonialism have not been redeemed yet. And here he's talking about systemic, you know, oppression.
Well, I think that's a very savvy mm-hmm. ploy, actually, mm-hmm. to begin to include that language, to actually sort of siphon off the top, the sort of thinnest understanding of what you might have of social justice, and then include that into your rhetoric while you're actually talking about something else. Pretty smart.
Wokeness without any understanding of history, it's, again, really poor. I mean, do you realize how much better dental health we have because of the introduction of fluoride into the water? It's not the only thing. There was toothpaste, which when they added that fizzy ingredient in the 1930s, it also resulted in better health. But fluoride is a big reason. I've looked into this recently because of Andrew Huberman's fluoride episode. And Dr. Andrea Love told me that in order for fluoride to actually be toxic in the human body, you have to drink 714 liters, which is 188 gallons, of fluoridated water in a sitting because it leaves your body.
Well, then you would die of water poisoning. You would die of water
poisoning.
Exactly,
which recently happened to a woman in her garage. Like, that's a real thing. But despite what Sasha claims, fluoride does, as I said, leave your body. It doesn't hang around to contaminate you. It doesn't build up in your body. The dose makes the poison. And I don't want to get ahead with an upcoming episode, but we'll be looking into glyphosate soon as well. And let's just say for now that Sasha isn't even using thin evidence. He's just riffing to scare people about heavy metal toxicity. I'm guessing a supplement sale came soon after.
It's scaring people. It's also exciting them. And I get a lot of excitement from his voice when I listen. And I don't feel like he's excluding himself from the ranks of the polluted. I always feel like there's this part of him that likes the notion of being a ticking time bomb. I mean, I think with a lot of these characters, I get the sense that they really, really want terrible things to happen or to be true. And then also there's this other thing in his language that I'm hearing where I think it appeals to something that haunts the tech hesitant, you know, boomers or, you know, older Gen Xers in the crowd, that there's this feeling that there could be a single button or a click of something that could suddenly wipe away your life. I think a lot of the panic around electric and self-driving cars in this discourse is also about whether the fact that they are just completely online, like human beings are generally, and when they're networked, it means that they can be shut off in mid-drive by a tech overlord just clicking their mouse. And that's what makes Elon Musk such a strange character for them all, because on one hand, he offers total freedom of speech, but then he also potentially imposes total control over movement and even identity.
When Skynet goes live with the single press of a button, there can be mass depopulation. It's wild. Right after that moment that we just heard, LA yoga community's own Bianca Rulig interjected, as promised, with how aluminum foil replacing tin foil was all part of the plan. But speaking of taking action in the world based on outlandish beliefs, hear Sasha tiptoeing up to inciting stochastic terrorism with how he talks about this next topic.
Gender affirmation surgery is mutilation of the body and divinity. Meet the surgeons. That's not my slide, that's one of Jane's. I think it's a very worthy slide to put up. And I think that these creatures need to be exposed and publicly named and shamed moving forward, because it is perpetration of ritual satanic rites. Yeah. If we really understand the witchcraft and the occultic nature, that's not to say that either of these particular idiots have any idea about occultic knowledge or Saturnian logic.
It's just so gross relating transgender surgery to satanic rituals. I also shared on my handles this week Cat Williams saying the same thing to Joe Rogan, which has gotten a much bigger audience than this clip, obviously, and talking about how transgender people are part of Baphomet's plan, which is a Knights Templar demon from like the 12th century. And people like in the comments just eating it up. And it, you see the hard right pivot here in woke LA right in front of you. I mean, how did this statement land in the room? It seemed quiet, and I know it wasn't really well attended, but did anyone find this part disturbing?
As far as I can tell, people are nodding along, and any of these kinds of references actually around me, I could hear little, you know, sounds of agreement.
To me, this disgusting rant goes right back to the medical satanic scenes in Michelle Remembers. But then even farther back than that, it points to the vision of the vaccinator as the vampire, as Eula Biss covered in On Immunity. I have a speculation about how this becomes so inflamed, or at least part of the reason, which is that when I first became aware of trans issues in medical care, I was very naive and maybe unconsciously Catholic about it all. And so I'd like to give a trigger warning for queer and trans listeners. I'm about to confess something about some harmful programming I had that I had to dismantle inside myself. I remember learning about affirmation medicine and surgery, and it made me scared and uncomfortable, and not in this reasonable way that limited itself to, you know, legal and consent concerns around young people and how consequential choices get made. It wasn't about public policy or protecting the vulnerable. Like, my queasiness was about protecting myself. And I remember really obsessing over this question of what it would be like to have intense dysphoria and then to actually do something about it. Like, it seemed to be an impossible amount of freedom that I could reimagine my gender. And I think that that is what I focused on, that what trans reality actually brought up within me about myself was that if my friend could reimagine their entire world, like, could I do that too? And what would it mean? What did it mean about my own certainty in life? And so just listening to any garbage like this and to, you know, Sasha Stone's pathological certainty about everything, you hear this a lot in the gender critical crowd. Like, I really wonder how much they're really just talking about themselves.
Yeah, it's so incredibly loaded. And I appreciate those really thoughtful reflections on your process, Matthew. I think it's catastrophic that these cynical right-wing bigoted types are able to hijack the discourse in the way that they do. So in addition to this, Stone, of course, has ideas about geopolitics and consciousness with regard to Gaza and Ukraine and how this relates directly back to his and my neck of the woods in the 70s, which he describes as a proxy war between NATO and Russia. And it's fascinating to me because he sees Gaza as a distraction that is somehow manifested by our undisciplined consciousness.
Oh, okay. So it's undisciplined consciousness that's responsible for the murder of 1,200 Israelis by Hamas fighters and then the murder of 40,000 Palestinians by the IDF, because everybody needs a Vipassana retreat.
Well, you're not being skeptical enough, you see, because it's us focusing on it that keeps it manifesting. And it's actually a deliberately concocted distraction from what the powers that be are doing, and exactly the same with Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
All right, so a Vipassana retreat where we don't think about these brutal wars and then they will stop.
This actually is the last clip, and it's along these lines. The Patreon supporters will have heard this on my bonus episode from last week. Some may have seen it on Instagram. This is like 10 days before Remember Vladimir Putin's most popular political rival, Alexei Navalny's death at 47 in an Arctic prison work camp, Sasha Stone had this to say while projecting an image of Putin and Tucker Carlson, who the previous week had gone to Russia to interview him, up on the screen.
This here is the assault against the saboteurs. The fact that the most powerful man on the face of the earth, bar none, who is Vladimir Putin, we know that because his frequency jamming technologies closes down US warships, end of game, baby. So that is the most powerful man on the face of the earth. Love him or hate him, I don't care which. I happen to love him. Tucker Carlson, love or hate him, I don't know Tucker. I had a delightful FaceTime conversation with him a few months ago. Don't know the man, but certainly regard him as a hero of our time. And yes, there's Elon Musk in the wings with a lot of Wonga, and there's Donald Trump, and there's others. But the point being that a guy, kind of grad boy, anchorman, who just happens to actually really dig truth and honest inquiry and journalism, has been propelled through the gestalt, through the zeitgeist, because we are the ones willing this to manifest. And we're also willing the man that they would paint as the devil, Vladimir Putin, we want to hear his rationale. And boy, does he have a good rationale.
I love the Tucker Carlson. I FaceTimed with him. I don't know him, but we just spent some time on FaceTime.
We had a lovely FaceTime. Yeah, I also love the whole audience pretending they know what gestalt means and then zeitgeist.
Yeah, he could see he's ramping up. Like, he's a lot looser and fluid with it. He's doing crowd work at this point in the conversation. I'm really glad it's the last clip.
Had a couple of drinks.
My God, I really wish these people would read an actual history book.
No, you don't, Derek, because they would fuck that up, man. They would just misquote it. They tear it to shreds. You don't want them to read.
I will offer suggestions. David Remnick has Lenin's Tomb, a fantastic book, and Applebaum's 700-page book on the gulags is even better to understand what that country is about. This Russia fetishism is just really weird. I kind of know why my family got the hell out a century ago. And let's be clear, I didn't come up with this, but I fully agree with it. The right is making Americans accustomed to authoritarianism so that when things like Project 2025 are implemented, they'll already have been onboarded into its basic precepts. And Tucker Carlson is a useful idiot, as Putin called him out the day after the interview. Sasha Stone, I would put into that category as well. I don't think he's being paid by some overlords. I think he actually is just this dumb, and he is serving a very important function for that sort of project right now. I understand why stooges like Tucker do it. They are monetizing it. I don't always get why these wellness folks follow suit. Though these are also not a people with a ton of historical knowledge, so the word follow might just explain it.
It's strong men and Orthodox churches, Derek. They love it. They love that stuff.
All right. That was my first 3 hours at the Conscious Life Expo, boiled down into less than 10 minutes of clips and a fair amount of us commenting on them. I know. I was exhausted by the barrage of fear-mongering, science fiction, new age mumbo-jumbo, and hateful political agitation. So I was also sitting by myself under my gray cap while most of the audience members were with little groups of friends. I was slightly anxious a lot of the time, wondering if Stone might recognize me or if someone might come over and harass me for recording and filming so much of the proceedings. The next event I was signed up for wasn't for another 2 hours. So I headed to the hotel lobby. I got something to eat in the little cafe before going for a walk on the busy and noisy airport adjacent streets. My adventure had really just begun, though. This episode is brought to you by the Jordan Harbinger Show. Do you want a new podcast to look forward to each week? One that's entertaining, informative, and packed with actionable content? Come on. Of course you do. The average podcast listener has 6 shows in rotation, so you're most likely not just listening to Conspirituality. And that's totally okay. I'd love to share a podcast to add to your list. The Jordan Harbinger Show is a top shelf podcast named Best of Apple in 2018. So don't just ignore my suggestion to listen to this one like you probably do with your other friends who tell you to listen to podcasts. Jordan dives into the minds of fascinating people, from athletes to scientists, political activists, mobsters, even hostage negotiators. And Harbinger has an undeniable talent for getting his guests to share never-before-heard stories and thought-provoking insights. Without fail, he pulls out tactical bits of wisdom in each episode, all with the noble cause to make you more informed, a critical thinker, and to better operate in today's world. I was on his show. In preparation, I listened to a bunch of episodes. He's just really good at what he does. Like episode 880 features Ian Bremmer, you know, the top-notch political scientist, and the topic is dealing with a world in disarray. But then you have episodes like his skeptical Sunday format, episode 882 looked at homeopathy. But he has other episodes on Ayurveda and also the popular pseudoscience of analyzing body language. There isn't a better podcast to listen to casually or seriously to expand your worldview. He's also got a strangely relatable weekly segment called Feedback Friday, where Jordan covers advice on everything from escaping a cult or a psycho family situation to relationships and networking, and even to asking for a raise. So point blank, Jordan Harbinger is smart, funny, he's easy to listen to. You'll be pressed to find an episode without excellent conversation, a few laughs, and even actionable advice that you can directly use to improve your life. You can't go wrong with adding the Jordan Harbinger Show to your rotation. It's incredibly interesting. There's never a dull show. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Part two, Medical Freedom Symposium.
I re-entered the hotel lobby after about 30 minutes walking the noisy and carbon monoxide rich streets around the Airport Hilton, and almost collided as I did with a very nattily turned out man in a well-tailored cream-colored three-piece suit. He was exiting the elevator, wired earbuds connected to his phone, glancing around to get his bearings in the hotel lobby. It was Del Bigtree, the big kahuna anti-vaxxer, and he was the headline speaker of the Medical Freedom Symposium. He recognized someone who came over and shook his hand, all smiles, brief exchange with finger-pointed directions to where the conference room is located. As soon as they parted, I took a deep breath and swooped in.
All right.
Yeah, Mr. Bigtree, I'm a big fan. Can I get a picture? He smiled broadly. Bleached white teeth, smooth, moisturized skin, a warm and firm handshake. We leaned in to snap the selfie on my phone, and I thanked him and walked away somewhat adrenalized.
Okay, Julian, is he a big guy? Is he a bear? Like, did you get a sense of like charisma and welcome from him? Could you feel the appeal?
He is charismatic and well put together. He's sturdy. You know, I often underestimate how tall I am. So when I'm next to someone like that, who I think of as a big guy, I'm like, oh, they're not actually so big after all.
I think we all have that problem because we're all over 6 feet, right?
Yeah. Now, there was almost an hour until the symposium started and my phone battery was about to die. So I paid the $60 for a third party phone charger from the gift shop, set myself up next to a power outlet on a sofa in the really large lobby. I took off my shoes, gathered my legs up as you do into a meditation posture, and pulled the cap down low to cover my eyes.
And you also put out a sign advertising aura readings for $20, right?
I did not do that. And I have to say that given that the weekend was actually over, this is the Monday after where they have these conferences, there were only about 12 people in the hotel lobby and cafe who were sort of classic New Age Expo visitors. And they were in little groups, and those little groups were actually quite often doing energy healings on one another.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great.
At the appointed time, I made my way over to the conference room and I quickly realized that this would be a much better attended event. The Medical Freedom Symposium was turning into well over 100 people filtering in, and it was a much more diverse demographic. Now the atmosphere was electric. Each speaker, once they got going, was starting off kind of quiet and measured, and then peppering the audience with sensational claims and highly improbable factoids and rhetorical questions about the awful truths that the powers that be were hiding. But each of them in turn would follow this arc where they would get louder and more forceful until they arrived at some kind of pseudo-revolutionary call to arms, and the crowd was there for it. Where the Sasha show was made up of mostly bit part players gathered to give the appearance of a conversation, these presenters were more of a supergroup, and Dale Bigtree was still very much the rock star at the center of it. So there was Steve Kirsch. He's a hugely successful and mega rich serial tech entrepreneur who's since become a COVID misinformation vector. You know about this guy, right, Derek?
Yeah, he's Dan Debunk the Funk Wilson's sparring buddy over on Twitter. Kirsch is one of the two inventors of the computer mouse. He co-independently developed it back in 1980. He also founded an early search engine, InfoSeek. I remember using that in the 90s. He sold it to Disney in 99. He's pretty loaded. I don't know if I could be in the same room with him without just going off. So again, your kudos to your patience. I don't know much about his earlier politics, but we do know that he was radicalized into COVID contrarianism early on. He's been one of the crazier of the COVID conspiracists and anti-vaxxers out there, especially because he has no medical training whatsoever. He's a tech guy who just jumped in and built a platform off this. My sense is that he really buys into all of this because he's not someone who needs the grift of wellness cures, for example, like so many others that we cover. He's got the financial means, so he just seems to be a full-on douchebag.
Yeah, there's ambition there too, maybe if not for more money, certainly for more glory, because early on in the pandemic, Kirsch founded a company that tested off-label use of various already circulating drugs for COVID. You know the ones.
Yeah, so he's inventing the right-click button for canceling public health.
Yeah, and so when that project imploded due to his impatience with the unwillingness of his highly qualified board that he appointed to endorse weak evidence from preliminary research on drugs like fluvoxamine and hydroxychloroquine, they all ended up resigning. And what do you know it, Stevie became an anti-vaxxer. So next up, there was Brian Artis, Dr. Brian Artis, who has a company called Artis Labs and claims to be the whistleblower on the supposedly deadly drug remdesivir. Then Dr. Jeffrey Bark, who's a founding member of America's Frontline Doctors. I said this was a bit of a supergroup, right? You remember them. And he's also got those blue chip contrarian expert credentials because he's been an associate professor and a medical board member. Slightly more famous than him is the third doctor, Robert O. Young. He's an Oprah-endorsed naturopath who has books on alternative medicine and the alkaline diet. He's also famous for having $105 million in damages awarded against him to a cancer patient he had persuaded to forgo medical care in favor of the alkaline diet.
Wow.
And this resulted in her sadly progressing to terminal stage 4 cancer. So hopefully she had a little time to spend that money and her family will get some satisfaction from that, sadly. Young also spoke at Sasha Stone's theatrical pseudo-legal affair, the International Tribune for Natural Justice, maybe Tribune. How do you pronounce that? International Tribune for Natural Justice? His comments there in 2020 about Bill Gates, vaccines, and depopulation were the ones that went viral on social media about that. Now, rounding out this illustrious group was, you'll be very pleased to hear, Matthew, a Canadian constitutional lawyer named Sean Buckley. You guys all know each other, right?
Yeah, we totally know. Well, this guy was lead counsel for the trucker convoy defendants, people remember that from back in Ottawa 2 years ago.
And that's what he talked about. He talked about that in very polite and measured tones.
Great.
The whole thing was emceed by a glamorous older lady named Kelly Gallagher, whose main claim to fame is being a 5-time cancer survivor, powered by her 6th pacemaker, which is impressive. She's done some network TV, and so she did a great job introducing the panel, setting them each up to speak for what turned out to be about 20 minutes each, following the arc I'd mentioned before, starting off conversational and then building into the unhinged, flaming crescendo. Of course, each one had to then outdo whoever went before in terms of the whole event having its own rising intensity, especially when it came to the last two speakers. It was all a bit overwhelming, but I made the sacrifice for you and hung in there. Here's Brian Artis hitting his flow. Now, this is after he's calmly informed the gasping audience that 3 different countries using DNA testing had independently found that the COVID spike protein was actually made from the venoms of 20 different snakes and snails and 16 creatures who live on the ocean floor. It's surprisingly specific for such a nonsense. And that the best protection against it was to smoke organic tobacco and wear nicotine patches.
You know that when they injected cobra toxin, which was found to be the spike protein of COVID, they could create a glioblastoma in any mammal while you were on lockdown in labs in less than 72 hours. And then they turned around and in 72 hours they reversed and dissolved it with nicotine only. Did you hear that the UK, the United States, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia now have agendas nationally to get nicotine products out of circulation by the year 2030 for all citizens? And did you hear Joe Biden 2 months ago said we're going to reduce? I'm going to be the first president ever to reduce nicotine amounts in tobacco products for America. Not anything else, just nicotine. Nicotine was and should be considered one of the greatest antidotes to this pandemic you have ever seen.
Is he claiming some sort of First Nations knowledge of the healing power of tobacco?
No, not at all. This guy is just all science.
All right, okay.
This nicotine renaissance is really fucking weird. There's the Brownstone Institute, which is big on that. The founder, Jeffrey Tucker, wants to bring back smoking cigarettes, and not only for adults. He promotes childhood smoking. Wants to do away with childhood labor rights. Yeah, you're laughing, Matthew, but he actually tried to hook his son on cigarettes to get him away from marijuana. He also claims that stopping children from working robs them of the good life.
Well, listen, if you're going to make children work, you should give them fucking smoke breaks, right? Listen, I just want to flag for listeners that I actually interviewed Jeffrey's daughter, Julia, over on our Patreon listener story series, and she had this really like moving account of growing up in his Tradcath homeschool environment and how she moved beyond it. It was really cool to talk to her.
Yeah, and that Brownstone Institute, that's, you know, they're related to the whole group that came out with the Great Barrington Declaration. Vinay Prasad is involved with them. Jay Bhattacharya is involved with them. Brett Weinstein is now often listed as being an associated kind of bigwig at the Brownstone Institute as well. Artist goes on to claim that researchers in two countries have created 100% remission of long COVID using nicotine patches. This was kind of his main thing, just nicotine. Most of the other speakers, I have to say, were pretty boring. And besides, I was running out of batteries and storage space. Essentially, Kirsch told his story of being rejected by the scientists he wanted to rubber stamp the drugs he sought to use against COVID, and then of being red-pilled on Twitter by someone claiming vaccines were killing all these otherwise healthy people. I almost fell asleep during the Canadian lawyers talk about the bank accounts of convoy truckers being frozen and how his home country had become an authoritarian regime. And so Americans should take the warning.
Yeah. Okay. So temporarily frozen, we have to say, and under the Emergency Act, which was then investigated for a year with Trudeau winding up on the stand for an entire day answering questions. And then there's an initial ruling that the imposition was actually unreasonable according to our Charter of Rights. So yeah, some regime, huh?
Yeah, those people, of course, were immediately sent off to the gulag. Jeffrey Bark is somewhat famous for pulling out his 9mm during an anti-mask video in which he was being interviewed by Peggy Hall, saying that this gun offered more protection against COVID than a mask would. This time, his talk was actually quite muted and mostly revolved around his grievance at believing he'd found a cure for cancer, but was stonewalled by his university. Robert Young, he's that Oprah guy, recited the standard laundry list of anti-vaccine claims, as well as echoing Sasha Stone about vaccine biochips being receivers for Wi-Fi signals that will make your family and friends drop dead. And I have to tell you, all this time I'm sitting there, I'm watching, I'm waiting for the one woman on the panel. I'm wondering, is she going to be next? Is she going to be next? Oh, it's getting closer and closer to the top of the hour. And I was feeling, this is me projecting, but I was feeling bad for her. She was kind of this awkward seeming lady. She had big, thick glasses and sort of an unusual, messy haircut. I was rooting for her to get to go before Del Bigtree, anticipating that he would be the big closer.
Yeah, you don't want to follow Del.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, who is this person? She's not listed on the webpage about the event. I didn't recognize her. Well, her name is Lee Dundas, and we've been waiting for this moment. She blew the roof off the place. She was the only one who got up on her feet. She walked around the panelist tables and grabbed a wireless microphone that was there for the Q&A, and she worked that room like a seasoned hate preacher. I'm talking striding down the center aisle, yelling into the microphone, tearing up as she told stories, cracking really dark jokes, whipping the crowd up into a United We Stand holy war frenzy. On her way to the climax that we'll hear next, Dundas alternately regaled and harangued the crowd with tales that seemed designed to kickstart them into action. She talked about harassing local school board members by following them home and confronting them on their doorstep with secrets she had procured about them via a private investigator.
Oh, man.
Really nice lady. She claimed to have personally intimidated Gavin Newsom into dropping one of his proposed quarantine measures. She seemed to be establishing her credentials as a take-no-prisoners badass role model. She sung the praises of the farmers who, in part because they know what it's like to have war on their soil in recent memory, are protesting in various European countries. And a lot of that is like anti-environmental regulation process, right?
Right.
And exhorted the crowd to stand up because we are going to win this war. Dundas also told awful stories about being a human rights lawyer in Thailand trying to save sex trafficked children. And she said she was in a corrupt communist country with jihadis at her back while doing so. Right before she told this closing story in her speech, she said, "You're living in a communist country. You just think you're in America." The story here is about a Thai girl abducted into sex slavery and how she exemplified the kind of courage that Lee Dundas wants the audience members to have in their war for medical freedom.
So a couple months go by, and the guards would sometimes get bored. And when they would get bored, they would just line us up in a row, firing style, and they would just go down the line laying guns on temples and executing us. And she said, it with a lot of condescension and derision. And every time they'd get to a new girl, she would drop to her knees and grab for the gun and grapple for it and beg and plead for her life to no avail. Huh. And then she stopped talking. And I said, "What did you do when they got to you?" And she said, I stood up and I reached out my hand and I said, "Give me your gun. I'm not fucking living like this anymore. I will shoot myself." And the owner of the camp was walking by and he overheard me and he said, "You follow me into my office." And he sat her down and he said, "Little girl, I've been doing this 10 years. And everybody will beg for their life, no matter how strong and poser of a person they are. They will beg for their life in the final analysis. But you didn't. And I want to know why." And for the second time that day, she stood up, she leaned over the desk, and she said, "I know you have a gun in one of those drawers. Give it to me. I'll say it again. I'm not living like this anymore. I'll shoot myself." Mm. And the owner of the slave camp leaned back in his chair, rocked back and forth a couple times, did one of these, and said, "Get the hell out." She walked out of there alive. And I learned that day in a high-rise in Bangkok from a girl who was at the time younger than my daughter is now at UC Davis, a lesson in courage that I am not ever forgotten, and everybody needs to be hearing this and doing this every day. And here it is. When you are facing a locked and loaded weapon that is ready to do you in and is full of hate and anger and tyranny and is leveling your damn temple, you stand up. You always stand up because you are far better off fighting and dying on your feet than ever taking a damn knee, because tyranny will chase you on your knees, but you will find freedom, even if it's not the kind you hoped for, if you stand and fight. I will be selling my book at the back.
Yeah, so it's part movie script,
mm-hmm,
and part like football coach cheer by the end. And none of this, there's no like references for any of this. This is all a story that she heard that she's reciting as just sort of like just for rhetorical value, right?
Yeah. And she'll be selling her book in the back.
When the book has the story?
Did you hear her say that at the very end?
Oh, no, sort of. I missed that. All right. So she's selling her book. Okay.
Yeah. So right as the crowd is roaring and starting the only standing ovation that happened that day, she says, "I'll be selling my book in the back." Book is her talking about her time working as a lawyer in those kinds of situations that she's telling that story about.
Okay. So we got to fact check all of that.
Yeah.
Or maybe not.
So as it turned out, after that, Del Bigtree was a bit of an anticlimax. He stayed sitting in front of the mic on the table. He ran down his usual anti-vax talking points and his grandiose claims about all of the lawsuits his organization is supposedly winning against government agencies and big pharma. But right here is where he got excited.
I will tell you, we have one shot, and it is not Donald Trump, and it is not Joe Biden. And if you are thinking anything like that, you're out of your fucking mind. Yeah. It's all I got to say. Yeah. We have a man running for president in Donald Trump that literally handed our enemies, the pharmaceutical industry, billions, if not trillions, of our money, of our hard-earned tax money, gave it to them. Let them take over the world, shut down our fucking businesses. Yep. A man who promised us he would run and run it like a business took the keys to America, handed them to Tony Fauci, and said, drive them off a fucking cliff, and we did. No. We lost $3 trillion in the middle class that went to the rich, the billionaires, his friends. And we got Joe Biden that stepped right in there, took that COVID vaccine and forced it on us. Both of them destroyed everything we know of freedom, any idea of what this country is supposed to represent. And if you right now are sitting in this room and you have not gone to Kennedy24.com and watched the videos and said, let me sign myself up, let me get him on the ballot in California, then you're all wasting your fucking time here. Yeah. I'm sorry I'm getting tense about this, but I don't know what you plan on doing. I don't know what you plan on, what's going to save you or what it's going to look like. When you have a freedom warrior that is out there being ridiculed and ripped apart and thrown shit on and mud and tar and feathers, and he keeps standing up for your kids.
Yes.
And keeps taking it, even though he's a Kennedy and he doesn't have to. And I said to him, why don't you walk away, Bobby? You're the greatest environmental lawyer that has ever been. You've been fighting for the people your whole life. The Democrats love you. If you won't walk away from this vaccine issue, it's killing you. Yeah. And it's killing your family name. And he said, because I am a Kennedy, because my father would drive off the path, take us to the poorest cities and the poorest areas, and say, we as Kennedys don't represent the people that have all the money and have all the businesses. We represent the people that can't speak for themselves. Those that are being injured. We have a man running for president that is fighting for those being injured by vaccines, that is fighting for doctors like this that are losing their licenses every goddamn day. And we're so close to becoming Canada over here. Our Constitution barely held us together.
If only.
During COVID. So I am passionate. And I love you. But you have got to get up. Stop going, oh my God, those people on that panel. Oh, it's so amazing. Thank you for your work. Fuck that! I can't do this. We're not going to do this. We're not going to pull this off without you.
Yeah.
Get off your fucking couches. Get out. Get people up and get them. Get Bobby on the ballot. Start supporting all these things you know. This is your issue. You don't have to be a talk show host. You don't have to be a doctor. You're a citizen of the greatest nation in the world that's being taken out of your hands right now.
Yeah.
My favorite line is the I love you with the two beats around it on either side of it. And here I think, I mean, so this is why he's here, mm-hmm. right? He goes from full on his anti-vax show right into political stumping for Kennedy. But we have a second Del Bigtree here, don't we? Because this is not things that he would say on CNN. This is not, you know, this is not the language that he's going to use in the newsletter. How did the F-bombs go over, Julian? It sounded pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people are used to hearing that word. And I think in the context here, it's conveying his passion.
I also got to say the $3 trillion citation, there is truth that a lot of corporations took advantage and exploited a lot, as did individuals we know with the money that was being given away. Mm-hmm. But they never reference all the tax cuts that were happening under the administration. I don't know if he referenced Trump at all. I know he's for Kennedy, but he puts the vaccines on Biden. Let's remember who actually Project Warp Speed or Operation Warp Speed actually brought the vaccines in. The anti-vax rhetoric just kind of glosses over where they actually came from and focuses so intensely on Biden that it's a little bit jarring, but it also just fits in every clip you've shared today. has a really poor understanding of history, even recent history.
You know, I'm gonna impose upon you the penalty of going back and listening to that again, because what he's saying is that it happened under Trump, and Trump gave away all this money, and Trump let the corporations exploit us, and then Biden took the baton and continued the same thing. So they're both essentially the same when it comes to the issue of vaccines, and so that's why you should vote for Kennedy.
So a history scholar, my bad. I apologize.
Clearly.
Julian, thank you for your service. I think we will both join you there next week or next year. We're going to set up a table. We'll sell some merch. I think it'd be
next
great.
Week. Nice. We should have a Toronto version.
Next year.
So with that, as soon as that ended, I pressed stop on my audio recorder. I put my phone in my pocket. I got up and I hightailed it out of there. I was like, I need to go home now.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Conspirituality. We'll see you here on the main feed next week when Brad Abrams joins us to talk about psychic surgery, or we'll see you over on Patreon.